Matt Whitaker, former U.S. Acting Attorney General.
This is such a great conversation about America, our future, what's going to save our republic.
We have a great football player. Matt Whitaker is here. Matt.
They tried to bury me. They didn't realize I was a C.
It's a touchdown. Whitaker.
Former acting U.S. Attorney General.
Under President Trump.
I'm going to be an unwavering supporter of law enforcement.
Welcome to Liberty and Justice with your host, Matt Whitaker.
Welcome to Season 3 of Liberty and Justice. I'm your host, Matt Whitaker. Remember, all year we are presented by the American Cornerstone Institute. I have joining me my good friend, Hogan Gidley. Hogan, how are you?
Doing really well, Matt.
I think you have a impressive resume. You're vice chair at the Center for Election Integrity at America First Policy Institute. We have a big thing a couple of weeks down in Fort Worth. And then you're obviously, everybody knows you from TV, you're the former national press secretary for the Trump campaign, and you were at the White House as the principal deputy press secretary for President Trump. So, and you're also a great guy and a good friend of mine, and we seem to be traveling all over the country, not together, but in the same places. So it looks like we're efficiently and effectively spending our own time. I just saw you last week in Palm Beach, and it was lovely.
Yeah, and I saw you a couple weeks before that in an airport. I just sat
That's
down
right.
and looked over, and you're sitting right next to me in a restaurant.
And we sat down and had a beer, and we really solved all the world's problems. And that's kind of how this came about, to try to get you on my very popular show. As you know, Liberty and Justice is just on a rocket ship right now, and it's hard to contain all the enthusiasm for the show.
Well, yeah, that has to do with the host. If the host is no good,
it's mostly I got great guests.
You're so charismatic. You're so charismatic and so funny. But no, in all seriousness, I mean, we worked together, you know, for a while now, and I'm always impressed your knowledge of the law, what we have to deal with every day, and so much of what we've seen in politics has centered around lawfare. How the weaponization of government against people it just disagrees with politically is occurring every single day. And someone like you, obviously being on the front lines of that, always impresses me because there's so much going on and so much, I think, abuse happening to so many people that it's good that you're out there fighting for us because we need people like you out there every day, and I appreciate all you do.
Well, thanks, Hogan. And we're going to keep fighting. You know, I have been paying very close attention to especially what you're doing along with Ken Blackwell and others going around the country, not just focusing on the swing states, although you have focused a lot on Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, Arizona, Nevada, Georgia, and North Carolina, but you've also just focused on election integrity generally. So like comparing 2016, 2020, as we head now into 2024 presidential election, what would you say is the current state of election integrity, and are things better than maybe they were previously?
It's better. It's nowhere close, I don't think, where it needs to be, because you still have a lot of states that refuse to implement things like voter identification requirements to be able to vote. So proving you are who you say you are when you cast a ballot kind of seems obvious to a lot of folks, but there are a lot of states out there who won't do it. But look, one of the things we wanted to do was really work, as you're well aware, when you want to work in those states, right? And it's important because the states are the ones that are responsible via the Constitution to determine the time, manner, and place of elections. It goes to state legislatures. So what we did was we started to work with those local legislatures to try and shore up some of their laws, fix some of the loopholes to make sure that, you know, legal votes and legal voters were protected by law. Thankfully, we've secured various forms of election integrity legislation in about 35 states. So it's a lot better off than it was before. But more than just getting bills passed or referendums that people have voted on, we just had a big victory in Wisconsin, for example. We often find that the legislatures will pass something and then a Democrat governor will just say no and veto it.
Or
so
a judge.
We have to go and take it right to the people, right?
Yeah.
And that's been a fairly effective way. But more so than just the law, I think a lot of people, or legislation or lawfare, as we talked about, people are now paying attention to this, which I think is really important. I mean, it's somewhere in the top 2 to 3 issues nationally for a lot of folks because, you know, people care that their vote is protected. And so now we have a lot more people willing to be poll watchers and poll workers. We're holding training sessions all over the country in those important states so that they can get out there and know what to look for, know who to contact when something happens in real time. Because, you know, once those votes kind of go through that machine, it's problematic. The toothpaste is out of the tube by then. So trying to get people trained up on what to do on the front end is important too. So really, it's a bigger awareness nationally about this. And one last thing I'd say is people on the right and the left have been complaining about elections for decades. And, you know, in 2000, it was the whole Florida debacle. Remember, the Supreme Court had to step in. And while we did trade, I guess, hanging chads and dimpled, you know, ballots, or hanging ballot, dimpled chads, whatever, with drop boxes and, mass mail-in, there's still people complaining about the process on both sides. And so it's incumbent upon us, groups like ours, to kind of figure out the best ways to get legislatures to understand that and then pass good laws to protect their people.
Yeah, and I think there has been an attention on securing the election and securing ballots. And, you know, I thought about, you know, I saw you at Mar-a-Lago recently, and that day alone I had to pull out my ID to rent a car, get on a plane, and go into, the president's home. And so, I mean, I just think, you know, presenting a voter, an identification driver's license to vote just seems like a very basic part of the whole thing. You know, obviously I didn't buy beer that day, but I should have, and that would have been four times that I would have been required to produce an ID. So I think that it's beyond time to get that as a, you know, in all 50 states as an election security, election integrity piece.
Well, and it's very popular. Like 85% of people think you should have a photo identification, not voter ID, but an actual photo identification to prove you are who you say you are, which again seems pretty elementary. We have to do it for so many other aspects in our lives, as you just pointed out. And remember, this happened in Georgia, and it got such blowback when they passed those type of laws that people came out and they pulled the All-Star game from Georgia because they said it was racist. These laws were voter suppression. And, the President of the United States, Joe Biden, came out and said it was like Jim Crow 2.0 and called it Jim Eagle or some nonsense like that. But what do you know? It turned out the black vote spiked by like 200%. White vote went up over 100%. Like, people were more willing to go vote because they felt like their vote mattered and it was being protected. So voter identification, very important to that process. And, you know, Kim Blackwell always says to me, and you said you got on a plane, he goes, yeah, we need to talk about photo identification. He says, voter identification with like an electric bill or whatever. He goes, try to get on a plane with your electric bill. Right. They won't let you on the plane, right? You have to show you're the right person. The same thing should happen to our votes. But I think a lot more people are really waking up to the fact that so many states have lax laws and they're trying to get them fixed.
Yeah, and that's good. And I know, you know, we as we head into kind of the general election season, I know there's a big focus on these 19 counties in the seven states. Where do you think the most kind of competition or the most change in 2024 is happening? We're going to get out of the kind of the law issue and go more into the pure politics issue. But where do you think there's going to be more competition in this country, maybe more than one would expect? Have you got any sense of that?
You mean competition in what regard? I'm sorry.
Just, you know, among R's and D's, among, you know, freedom-loving Americans and, you know, government abiding big liberal Democrats.
Well, I think usually, you know, these elections are always kind of couched in terms of, you know, the future of the country. How do you want the future of our country to look? And, you know, we used to always point back to Reagan to say, well, look how good it was back in the 80s. Like, we had a long way to look back to just point to some positives. But we actually had record-setting success and record-setting time just a few short years ago. So people remember the juxtaposition of where we were versus where we are now. And I think the competition to try and get out and you know, identify voters that can be moved, that can be mobilized, that can be registered, getting them to go vote on the understanding that the policies are so important. So that competitive nature in this upcoming race, which of course is going to be the longest election you know, we're going to experience in our lifetime, because it's starting so early. The nominees have been chosen for so long. We're going to see a lot of I guess, arguments, debate over which policies really did go to improve your lives. I don't think people are happy with the price of gas, with the price of groceries, with interest rates through the roof. I don't think people like crime in their city streets. Their neighborhoods are less safe. I don't think people like wars breaking out all over the world. I don't think people like us relying on other nations for oil and gas. And so as you begin to look at this through those lenses, moving into this election year, it's those issues are the ones you're going to have to explain to voters, get them to go, you know, go vote, because they are really motivated at this point because they don't like where we are as a country. And that's always the question. Where do you want to be over the next several years, and who can take you there? And right now, I think the choice is pretty clear if you're looking for not just a stable present, but a prosperous future, that you have to go back to those America First policies that really did improve the lives of all Americans, regardless of race, religion, color, or creed.
Yeah, and I think it's also interesting to see how important this southern border situation is to kind of rank and file Americans. You know, is that going to motivate them one way or another? I just don't hear anybody suggesting that the current policies are sustainable or really what we need to do, to your point, for a more prosperous future. But do you think that's going to be the primary issue, or is it just one of those things that until we get closer, the policy issues are kind of still a little really, that's the issue that's being fought out, is the framing of what's the most important policies on voters' minds.
Well, I can't believe I didn't list the southern border, as I that was one of my bucket areas in the White House. I dealt with it exclusively on a lot of.
And it's your most recent tweet, Hogan.
There you go. So I can't believe I didn't think about that. But yeah, I mean, that's the number one issue that people are talking about right now, because it fundamentally changes the country in an odd way that people don't want. And the beauty of taking people along that southern border and taking them and saying, all right, sanctuary cities, sanctuary states, you said you want all of these people there, we'll give them to you. And then after 5 minutes, the sanctuary city is like, hey, we can't handle this. It's too much. The irony is so perfect. But also, when the left is forced to live under their policies, oftentimes they reject it. They want everyone else to have to live under them. And nowhere is this more obvious and real than at the southern border. And so, you know, I always say this, but every single DUI, every murder, every rape, every burglary, every assault that's committed by someone in this country illegally is 100% preventable. It doesn't have to happen if we had sane, rational border policy. Over 100,000 fentanyl deaths, China sending those drugs to the cartels and everybody in Mexico, they're coming up to the southern border and killing our American citizens. And it's like, Joe Biden and them look back and look around and say, oh, you know, I don't have anything to do with this. It's the Congress's fault. But everyone knows Joe Biden came in day one and bragged about doing everything the opposite. Watch me get rid of all these executive orders Donald Trump had in place, somewhere like 94, 95 of them. And he owned that. And the media praised him for it. And so there's no way he can run away from that now. Everyone knows it's his fault. And so it was an executive branch action that now he claims needs a legislative branch solution. And that's not reality. Everyone understands that. And if I hear one more person tell me, well, there was a bipartisan bill in the Senate that would have, you know, fixed all these problems, I'm going to lose my mind. Because there was a bill that came out of the House that already passed, right? It came up for a vote and passed, H.R. 2, that actually secured the border. And the reason you know the quote-unquote bipartisan bill in the Senate did not secure the border, the easiest test to understand that is because the media and the left loved it. If it actually secured the border, they would be fighting against it. So I think that, as you brought up, is the big issue for the voters to have to face, because it really does affect their bottom line in so many ways. And when you see the government breaking its back to give millions of dollars to these people when they're not taking care of our own veterans or our own homeless, people get really frustrated by that, and they should be.
No, there's no doubt. And to your point, that Senate bill, I mean, it was not bipartisan. There was one senator that helped negotiate the terms of it. And my sense is, all reports by my friends in Oklahoma is that he's a good senator, but that he just got kind of taken advantage of by the left and by, you know, Kristen Sinema, who's now not running. But like the fact that you could have someone adjudicate these asylum claims at the border, at the port of entry, and that would be determinative to somebody's asylum status is crazy. I mean, that there's no way to conduct a meaningful inquiry as to somebody's, you know, right to be in the United States. And, you know, I just the whole thing just seems so manufactured, because we had it fixed, you know, in the Trump administration. You and I were both there. We had it fixed. We trickled down the amount of people that were coming into our country. We had them coming in between ports of entry. We had the asylum hearing timeline down to almost 18 months. It's now exploded to over 6 years on average, by all accounts. It's just, I can't wrap my head around just the intentional malpractice that the Biden administration did as it relates to border policy. We've just and they hung a sign that just said, "Everybody come. We're going to let you in. We're going to give you a green card. We're going to give you benefits. We'll give you food cards." It's nuts. And if you look, you know, I just saw our friend Kevin Hassett on Maria's show recently talking about kind of these recent job numbers, and you know, it's not. The headline numbers of these jobs being created are actually what's not really happening. They're part-time jobs. They're jobs from people that are kind of pending status in the asylum, you know, queue. And it's just not, you know, it's not real growth. It's not. It's just kind of, again, it's just Biden and his administration making stuff up.
Yeah, and you can't tell the American people that what they feel isn't real. Okay, so you can't go around and the Biden administration loves this. Well, we're just not messaging this right. I mean, these policies really are good. They really are helping your families, even though you don't feel it, even though it doesn't help your families. No, we promise it does. It's so offensive to the American people to have the left, the Democrats, try and tell them that. That's another blowback piece of this too. Don't pee on my boot and tell me it's raining. Okay, yeah. They know what's happening out there, and they know whose fault it is. And I think elections are always referendums on somebody. And typically you want you know this because you've run for office, you want the referendum to be on somebody else, not on you. And so if we can make this about Joe Biden and his policies and remind people where we were, where we are now and how we got here, thanks to Joe Biden and his feckless policies in every aspect of our life, then obviously the election, I think, is going to turn out really good for us and our side.
Yeah, well, in the few minutes we have left, Hogan, other than being the vice chair for the Center for Election Integrity at America First Policy Institute, what else is keeping you busy? I know we're heading into golf season, and you are a very good golfer. Is that going to occupy a lot of your free time?
I wish. I think everything kind of gets sucked into that election vortex for people like you and me. So anytime you can get away and, you know, swing the clubs a little bit, it's a good day. But look, it keeps me pretty busy focused on the elections because there are so many problems. But also, as you know, you and I both do a lot of TV and messaging about where we are and where we need to be. And that's always fun and important. But, I've got to get ready for this Fort Worth gig we've got in a couple weeks. And there's a rodeo out there or something like that, yeah, too.
But I'm excited. I got a new belt buckle when I was out in Park City, Utah, and can't wait to show that off. And of course, my cowboy hat and cowboy boots. I mean, it's like, you know, it's a full on rodeo, and it should be a blast.
It should be. Stockyards are such an interesting place. It's so much fun, and what a great slice of Americana. You know, you realize kind of part of our rich history is right there in Fort Worth every time you're there. But speaking of rich history and Americana, I was at WrestleMania last night in Philadelphia.
What was the headline match?
Well, I wasn't the headline. I fight. I was at
seven. You were in,
I was like an undercard. Yeah, okay. I did it seven. Yeah, it was The Rock. It was a tag team and The Rock came back after like 18-year absence. And I will tell you, you want to talk about electric? When Donald Trump goes into a room, when you go into a room, and when The Rock go into a room, it's kind of very similar. So you know what I'm talking about.
Which one is not like the other here.
But I'm telling you, that crowd, I mean, they know every chant, every song, everything all the wrestlers do, they know it. And they boo the ones they hate, and they cheer the ones they love. It was just really, really cool. We had a great time.
Yeah, I bet that was. Where was that? Where did they hold that?
Philadelphia, at the where they play football. It was outside.
Oh, wow. And the weather contributed to a okay night?
Yeah, it was 50-something degrees, 40-something degrees. Yeah, it was great. You know?
Well, I wish I could have been there. That's fun. Our friend Linda McMahon has invited me, like she did you, to be her guest, and I just can never seem to make it work, but I will. I've been to UFC when Donald Trump walks in, and that, to your point, is electric. I cannot imagine The Rock coming back. That had to be pretty amazing. And that dude's jacked. I mean, he is.
Yeah.
He takes really good care of himself.
He sure does.
He's very similar to me and my, physical training. Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. Very similar. He's got his Iron Paradise. Every time he goes somewhere, he has the weights brought with him and the whole thing. But, man, I'm telling you, those guys are great. You know, next to us was Kelsey. Taylor Swift one, the other one. The other brother plays for Philadelphia, I guess. And, he was there too, popping around doing stuff with veterans and other things. It was kind of neat.
That's awesome.
You know, just a good time all around.
All right. Well, and social media, people can find you where?
At J. Hogan Gidley. That's all my social media platforms, the same one, at J. Hogan Gidley. And we have so much going on with election integrity. We have so much going on in the news, of course. You can follow me there for any highlights and updates, like that.
Perfect. Well, Hogan Gidley, thanks for being a guest on Liberty and Justice, presented by American Cornerstone Institute. I will see you in about a week in Fort Worth, and I look forward to going to the rodeo with you with my brand new belt buckle.
It's going to be great. I can't wait to see it.
Liberty and Justice.